crawled over them. Infighting broke out as the demons began hacking at each other, desperate to reach the walls, and the manticores began slaughtering everything close to themselves. Slowly, the demons and Laura realized what was happening, but it was too late, as the demons continued to charge headlong into Nathan's trap. He finished casting his third fifth-rank spell, but let it lay dormant as he made further preparations using his binding stone magic. The demons sank into 100 meters of mud. Maybe mud wasn't the right word. Quicksand was the appropriate term, if quicksand consumed whatever sank into it. The first demons had found themselves waist-deep in a flesh-eating bog before they even knew what was happening. Then, those behind them had killed the front ranks as they kept going, only to find themselves also trapped in the bog. Even the usual demonic tactic of building a bridge of near-dead demons didn't work, because the quicksand killed the demons faster than they could cross it. The quicksand was a constant draw on Nathan's binding stone, as it partially relied on his ability to control reality to create it. Combined with the increased expense of using the binding stone in the portal, he planned to give up on the spell in only a minute or so. But he gave no outward signs of doing that. Instead, he winked at Laura and stretched out his arms, as if to say, "Your move." Laura screeched. Darkness coated both of her arms this time. Her anger reached boiling point as she made a table-flipping motion, and the entire 100-meter-wide stretch of quicksand in front of the walls vanished instantly. Every demon in the quicksand found themselves hanging in midair, the eerie white light hungry to take them. The demons screamed as they fell, never to be seen again. Nothing ever came back after falling into whatever lay beneath this world. Nathan wasn't done, however. The subterranean rock that had been uncovered by Laura's magic glittered. The fifth-rank spell that Nathan had cast earlier had lain dormant, but was now exposed. All hell broke loose among the demonic horde. Explosions rippled along the front of the horde, where Laura had removed the quicksand. Nathan stopped feeding power from his binding stone into his magic, as his job was done here. At the same time, the chasm began to close. This world hated voids and closed them, given the chance. More explosions rippled along the entire valley beneath Laura. She looked below herself, arms covering her face out of fear. Jets of steam burst into the air, higher than the wall. Clouds of vapor drifted away as chunks of mud, rock, and demon fell back to the ground. More and more explosions went off, and the overlapping thwooms even drowned out the drums for a brief while. Nathan's face burned with the intensity of the heat, even at this distance. He saw most of the defenders cower behind the battlements, unaware of what was happening. Sen stepped up onto the very edge of the wall, arms outstretched and eyes practically glowing as she stared in wonder at Nathan's spell work. Although it wasn't really a spell, so much as nature at work. He had modified the ground beneath the demons to contain countless underground pools of water. Except each pool was held at incredibly high pressure and then superheated using his magic. He had also protected each pool using barriers in order to prevent them from going off early. Laura's removal of the quicksand had been unexpected but welcome. The shifting of the ground had disrupted every pool at once. She had vaporized her entire army by accident. The idea had been based on geysers, which Nathan had run into multiple times while building fortresses in mountainous regions. The idea of using the pressurized water as a weapon had occurred to Nathan after nearly being splattered on a cave ceiling by one. Finally, the geysers died down. Most of the horde had been blown to pieces, seriously burned, or otherwise injured. Their numbers were greatly depleted. Far fewer demons jeered at Nathan. Laura remained unharmed, but she was furious. Her entire body became shrouded in darkness. Nathan reached for his binding stone and grabbed every scrap of power he could. Laura's power swelled and swelled. No time to cast a spell. Nathan slapped his hands onto the stone wall and reached for the barrier woven into it. His arms glowed as he pumped raw power into it. This was a rank one spell, but given he was using power from the binding stone, it didn't matter. It was horrifically inefficient anyway. Laura thrust her arms at the wall. The entire world seemed to shudder for a moment. Nathan swore he saw afterimages of everything, as if the world split apart, then pulled itself back together a moment later. He saw the cliffs of the world splinter apart, and the entire portal rupture into white light, as if everything was being destroyed at once. In another afterimage, the darkness slammed into the barrier and did nothing beyond provide an amazing light show. Nathan barely remembered one, as everything went black after the barrier shattered. But he distinctly remembered the wall beginning to disintegrate around him, and a burning sensation. But in the real world, the one that he was living in right now, the barrier didn't quite hold. It glowed so brightly that he couldn't see anything past it. Cracks formed along it. Then a massive hole formed in it. A moment later, the barrier vanished, and Laura's spell ended. Nathan nearly collapsed on the battlements. Then he saw the result of her tantrum. A 20-meter-long stretch of wall was gone. Not destroyed, or ruined, or assaulted in any way. Simply gone, as if it had been carved out of reality in the same way that someone would cut slices of a cake. Nathan's mind froze as he understood the raw power he was dealing with and what Laura's spatial magic allowed her to do. He didn't know how many people had been killed in that instant, as there were no bodies. Seraph had been preparing for the retreat, which meant removing people from inside the wall, but there was no way he had suffered zero deaths from an attack like that. In the distance, Laura doubled over in midair. She looked exhausted. Was an attack like that her limit? Not that it mattered. Something like that would end Nathan instantly. He considered himself lucky that she hadn't directed it at him. A small part of his mind remembered those afterimages, and a pit formed in his stomach. Were they... He shook off the thought.
I've had enough of this!
Laura shouted, throwing back her head and flicking her long white hair behind herself.
This was supposed to be fun. Why aren't I having sex yet? I bet Mora's banging somebody over there.
And with those words, Laura shot toward Nathan like an arrow. Chapter 22. The impact sent Nathan flying. His body was sturdy, but he pumped magic into it to enhance himself anyway. By the time he hit the ground, he had reinforced himself enough that he barely felt the crash landing. He pulled himself up from the remains of the earthworks he landed in and looked around. The battlefield was absolute chaos. His army was in retreat from the outer wall. Demons surged through the hole in the wall, and automatons met them in frenzied battle. Flames of all colors filled the air. Nathan smelled ash, smoke, and charred flesh.
Bastion! A beastkin knight shouted at him.
Her tail hung low, and her helmet was missing. Blood ran down her face, and she had one eye closed.
Go! Nathan shouted, gesturing for her to retreat.
A surge of magic built up above him. Triangles appeared in his hands, and he unleashed a pair of wind blasts at Laura. She batted them aside before dropping down. The beastkin knight backed away a few steps, then raised her weapon. The succubus glanced at her, then raised an arm. A sliver of darkness covered it. She curled in her wrist. Nathan charged her, his sword wreathed in light.
His attack distracted Laura, and she smirked at him. She fought him barehanded, covering her limbs in shadow and deflecting his sword and spells effortlessly. The gap between them was massive right now. He could match a duo gem champion, but only with preparation and a lot of raw power. But a messenger fought like a bastion on steroids. They cast high-rank spells faster than he could blink, and had a seemingly endless reserve of power. Laura might be a ridiculously silly woman in many ways, but her power was genuine. Underestimating her because she appeared to be an idiot was the same as underestimating Kadria because she was constantly horny. What Nathan needed was champion support, so he could prepare a fifth or sixth rank spell. But right now, all of his champions were tied up, helping his army retreat. The Beastkin Knight fled while he kept Laura busy, and Nathan found himself pushed back.
"You put up a better fight than I thought," Laura said. "No wonder Kadria claimed you. But she's always so focused on hiding her toys that she didn't realize we knew about her hiding spot."
Laura giggled.
"I know I promised Mora that I would wait until we met up at the end before I ravaged you, but you've been playing hard to get, so nobody can blame me, right?"
"Somebody's feeling confident," Nathan said.
"Oh, back talk. It's been a while since I've met a bastion who actually spoke to me."
Laura stopped attacking Nathan and pressed a hand against one cheek.
"All you bastions do is scream about your goddess and heresy and how they're going to destroy me if it's the last thing they do. It's nice to have a toy that won't be screaming death threats while I ride them."
"You misunderstand. There won't be any riding," Nathan said.
"Oh, no. There's going to be lots of riding. Even if I have to give you back later, I'm taking a nice long turn on the Bastion Express,"
Laura said with a wicked grin. "The what?"
"It's like what they used to call trains, and..."
Laura blinked.
"You don't know what a train is, so why am I bothering? I'm a messenger. You're just one bastion, and you're losing. Ergo, we fuck."
One day, Nathan will learn why messengers seem to use these strange terms. For now, he had stalled long enough. "I don't think my champions would appreciate it, so I'll politely refuse," Nathan said. "Now, if you'll excuse me." He leaped backward. Laura tried to follow him, but waves of energy crashed into her. Her dress fluttered, but nothing happened to it. That was a bad sign. Seraph landed in a roll behind Laura and grimaced at the sight of her gem ability having no effect. No quip escaped her mouth, and instead she raised her tonfas in a defensive position. Rolling her eyes, Laura prepared to deal with the pest. Then she sidestepped, narrowly dodging a massive glowing lance. She hovered in the air to avoid the lava that oozed onto the ground around it. Blue flames coated her body a moment later, but they were snuffed out within moments. Laura landed behind Nathan and snarled at Faye and Seraph as they took defensive stances in front of him.
"Couldn't your pets have stayed away? This only makes things more awkward," Laura said. "If they were smarter, they'd get to live and enjoy you after I'm finished."
"I feel I missed something," Seraph said.
"Nothing important," Nathan said. "I need you to cover me while I prepare a spell, then distract her so I have an opening." Seraph's expression tightened, but she nodded. Faye was more enthusiastic, probably because she hadn't realized how ineffectual her gem ability was. So far as Nathan could tell, the issue with Laura was actually hitting her. She wasn't invulnerable, but her spatial manipulation prevented anything from touching her. He needed something strong enough and timed right that would take her out in one hit.
A meteor crashed down where Laura stood, and she bounced backward to avoid it. The motion made certain parts of her body bounce noticeably. Nathan gestured for Seraph and Faye to attack. While they darted around her, he prepared another fifth-rank spell. Sixth rank would be better, but he wasn't sure if he had a whole minute or two to cast it. Seraph yelped as she was sent flying, her body flickering almost 20 meters in the air from one of Laura's punches. Faye's flame seemed to protect her from Laura's magic, however, but Nathan's plan didn't look good. Sen's spells were too predictable and easy to dodge. She'd even stopped casting them because they were so ineffectual. With Seraph out of action, Laura easily kept an eye on both Nathan and Faye. Her smirk didn't shift, and she even made crude gestures at Nathan. Around them, the demons overwhelmed the courtyard. Sen might have retreated to the inner wall. Maybe she was preparing to cast a sixth-rank spell, although Nathan hoped not.
This usually goes poorly. But why don't I have some fun? Laura said. You there, kitten. Aren't you awfully repressed?
Faye ignored the succubus and continued to circle. A moment later, the cat girl's tune changed. She began gasping for air. She collapsed to the ground, her face flushed and hands pawing at her body. Her scimitar rattled on the ground, abandoned.
That's so cute. You have an adorable kitten, Nathan. Although maybe she wants your cock a little too much.
Laura smirked. Nathan stared at Faye. She stared back and tried to crawl toward him. Her eyes had glazed over, and her ears were flat against her head. Given her other symptoms, Nathan had no choice but to assume that Laura had somehow activated her rutting, which left him without any champions to defend him. Seraph had been blown away. Sen was retreating and preparing another spell. Now Faye was incapacitated by physical need.
Now then, playtime, Laura purred. Give it up. You can't beat me.
A few demons crept up on Faye while she pawed at the ground. Laura laughed and turned away. But things weren't going to turn out the way Laura thought. As Nathan looked into Faye's eyes, he remembered how rutting worked and got an idea. He gripped his sword tightly and stopped casting his fifth-rank spell. Then he charged the succubus. Laura laughed and grabbed his arms, effortlessly stopping him. She pulled him against her. He let out an exaggerated grunt of pain, then another. His sword clattered to the ground.
I'm being gentle, Laura said.
She was, in fact, but her grip loosened even farther. Behind her, a bestial scream of rage erupted. Sounds of movement in the dirt. Laura laughed.
Sounds like somebody is enjoying their time with your pet, Laura taunted.
Nathan stared back at her, expression stony. You're rather new at this, aren't you?
What?
Because that wasn't a demon's scream. Laura furrowed her brow in confusion. Several moments later, she seemed to realize what he meant. Footsteps clattered on rock. Pushing himself out of her grip, Nathan kicked Laura in the stomach. She gasped and rubbed her stomach in shock. Darkness shrouded her limbs and she spun, only to have a scimitar slice her in half. Blue flames erupted along her body, melting her insides before they even hit the ground. Impossibly, Laura's expression shifted even after her separate halves decorated the volcanic rock.
Mine, Faye said, holding a bloody scimitar as she stood over Laura's remains.
A rutting beastkin was violently protective of their chosen mate. Faye refused to let any other man touch her, or any woman harm her mate. A low thrum ran through the ground after Laura's death, and the demons began to screech. They turned and tried to run for the portal, but it was too late. Within seconds, the demons began to melt away into motes of white light, as if they had never been here. Nathan collapsed on the ground, exhausted. He wasn't going to find rest any time soon, however. Faye's lust-filled eyes locked onto him, and she smiled at him. It took a while before Sen and Seraph found Faye's medication and dragged her off him. A long while. Nathan suspected they let her enjoy herself longer than necessary, possibly as thanks for defeating Laura. The battle was over. The twins were defeated. Leopold saw similar success on his side. But Nathan wanted answers to some of what he had heard. He hadn't seen Kadria before the battle. He needed to visit her soon. Chapter 23. The sky above Nathan returned to its normal hellish red glow, and purple light crept back into his vision. He wanted to say that everything was fine, but that would be a lie. Bodies, living and dead, were laid out across the upper valley of the portal. A makeshift infirmary had been set up in a pair of large tents beside the entrance to the keep. Normally, the wounded were treated inside the keep. There was no way this many people would fit inside, and Nathan doubted many would survive the journey or the wait. So, field healing it was. Healers walked along the ranks of the wounded, assessing their injuries and current state of health. Their hands almost never stopped glowing, and lines of magic often crisscrossed between their blood-encrusted fingers. Most diagnostic spells were first or second rank, and easy for ordinary magic users to cast. Vera was furiously weaving more complicated healing spells within a tent. Although Nathan's champions had made it out relatively unharmed, Leopold had taken significantly more damage. The old man's chest had been a horrific sight. His armor had partially fused with his torso, and Nathan had initially thought he was dead. Without Vera, Leopold wouldn't have survived. As it was, he still needed time to recover. Bastions regenerated at an accelerated pace, but they were unable to heal themselves directly using their binding stones. They still relied upon healing spells or enchantments. In the end, Leopold was only human. While everybody else rested and kept themselves busy, Nathan ducked out of the portal. The twins were defeated. The portal had closed back up. No signs of intrusion had been detected, and the princesses reemerged safely. Plenty of cleanup remained, but Nathan finally had the opportunity to talk to Kadria. He half expected to find somebody in his office. Seraph's regeneration ability allowed her to bounce back, despite the savage blow she took from Laura, and Sen had been in tears after failing to help in the fight. Nobody was present, however. Taking a deep breath, Nathan opened the black door that stood at the far end of his office. Once he stepped through, he blinked in surprise. Kadria wasn't here. The walls and furniture remained the same colorless outlines as per usual, save for the bed and the dining set. Nothing out of the usual there. What caught Nathan's eye was the steel door in the corner, with a bright yellow sign on the front. Nathan couldn't read the words on it, although the letters reminded him of those used across Western Domar. Ignoring them, he stepped up to the door and ran his fingers over it. It wasn't made of steel, he realized. Whatever material it was made from, it was relatively soft and almost artificial. The color was due to paint. He tried the door handle and found it was unlocked. He turned it. That turned out to be a mistake. Nathan's vision went white. Amazing. Your connection was so awful and obvious that even he found it. Kadria's voice droned from nearby. Somebody padded over to Nathan, the noise surprisingly loud, given Kadria was always barefoot. Nathan's vision slowly returned, but his hand went to his sword hilt out of instinct. He prepared to cast a spell. For whatever reason, the reserves of the binding stone reacted to his call first. Nathan found it difficult to use his internal magical power or to draw on magic from the surrounding air. There didn't seem to be any ley lines nearby, either. So he let the binding stone's strength wash over him.
And whose fault is that?
Laura's nasal voice whined. The twins were here? Was this a trap?
Yours? Because the two of you are dolts of a magnitude I thought impossible until now.
Kadria was right above him now. Her foot prodded him in the shoulder. Stars swam in his eyes, but he now saw enough to understand that he was inside some sort of ballroom or hall.
You can get up and drop the spell. This isn't a wise place to throw around magic unless you know what you're doing, Kadria said. You came from my world, so that means you're under my protection here.
Ha,
a much deeper female voice grunted out.
What makes you think you can keep him from us, little goat?
Nathan looked up as he stood. The first thing he saw were the twins, lounging on an oversized golden throne with plush red upholstery. Laura looked exactly as she had earlier, only in one piece and not on fire. Next to Laura was an almost identical succubus who wore a black dress instead of Laura's white. She must be Mara. Her eyes were also different to her sister's. Where Laura's eyes had looked almost human, save for her red pupils, Mara's eyes were decidedly not. Her sclera were pitch black, in the same way that Kadria's were violet. The combination of black sclera with red irises gave her a genuinely demonic look. The haughty scowl she wore only completed the look. The room they were in was far stranger than the twins, however. If Nathan didn't know better, he'd say he was inside a painting. Actually, he didn't know better. He had stepped through a black door that didn't exist in Domar, as far as the most accurate magical detection methods were concerned. On the other side of that door had been a black void that contained outlines of a room and furniture. Then he had stepped through a door made of a material he didn't know about and covered with writing that he couldn't read. He was also staring at a woman he had seen cleaved in half and her body incinerated only hours earlier. So for all he knew, Nathan had gone insane, and this was all in his head. Despite that grim thought, Nathan focused on trying to understand what he saw. The walls and floor looked real. The flooring was some sort of gray stone tile and mottled with black chunks of other rock. The hall itself was enormous, with stone and iron arches supporting a vaulted ceiling. White light shined through windows in the wings, and stone reliefs rested in the very top of the ceiling, staring down at Nathan. Everything reminded Nathan of the palaces in Western Domar, particularly the use of arches and stone columns. But that was the part of the room that looked normal. Displays and dioramas sat within the walls behind glass panes, but Nathan couldn't make out any details. Everything beyond the glass looked like a washed-out watercolor painting. Above him, some sort of skeleton hung in the air, longer than any non-magical creature he had ever heard of. But rather than a painting, it looked like a sketch. If Nathan turned his head, the skeleton shimmered like a pencil drawing on a page, and always looked the same from every angle. It only got worse from there. The reliefs in the ceiling had no details, and Nathan hurt his eyes straining to look at them. Trying to look through the windows was pointless, as they appeared to be a flat light source instead of a window. The decorations on the columns and arches didn't even reflect light, and appeared flat and lifeless.
"Having fun?" Kadria asked him. "This place hurts my head," Nathan said.
"It's the same as my world. The more you focus on it, the more it will hurt your mind. Let it wash over you and focus on what's real," Kadria advised.
"How do I know what's real?" Nathan asked, rubbing the bridge of his nose.
A sensation ran over the front of his pants, and a hand tried to undo them. He reached down and pulled Kadria off him. She smirked at him.
"Shall I give you another reminder?"
Nathan shook his head.
"No fair!"
Laura shouted. She stood up from her throne and balled her fists. Mora's hands pulled at her sister's dress, to no avail. Slowly, the sullen twin stood up and matched Laura's pose.
"I asked you a question, little goat," Mora said, eyes boring into Kadria's. "Now that Nathan's here, what makes you think you have any chance of keeping him?"
Nathan's muscles tensed, but Kadria rolled her eyes. She crossed her arms behind her head and pressed one of her feet into the ankle of her other foot, effectively balancing on one foot.
"Isn't this a problem?" Nathan whispered.
"I can hear you," Mara said, her voice carrying across the hall. Kadria looked up at Nathan with a bored expression, which was unusual for her.
"I've made some minor mistakes so far, but they're nothing I can't fix, particularly at this point."
"Hey, fuck you," Mora said. She ran over to them, dragging Laura by the arm. Both of their chests did interesting things as they moved, and Nathan wondered how their spines held up those massive tits of theirs.
"Yeah, we may have lost the invasion, but the Binding Stone is ours," Laura said.
She pulled Mora against herself, eliciting a grimace from her sister. Their chests pushed against each other for a moment before Mora pulled herself away.
"We can turn you into an ornament for Nathan. Use the Binding Stone as a foothold to enter this world and enjoy him to our heart's content. How can you stop us?"
"I don't know. Maybe because I know how to use my magic without killing myself, or needing to flick through hundreds of timelines to find one where I don't fuck everything up."
Kadria rolled her eyes.
"All you had to do was defeat Nathan, and you had me cornered. But you fuck that up like the idiots you are. I can understand losing to the old man, as he has some nasty tricks, and this portal limited your full strength."
Kadria pointed a finger at Laura.
"But you nearly won, and lost because you didn't realize that the horny cat girl was also a berserker. I nearly died of laughter."
Laura and Mora glared in response, but remained silent.
"Flick through hundreds of timelines?" Nathan asked, a pit in his stomach reforming. He had a bad feeling about this. Sighing, Kadria turned to face Nathan. A grimace marred her face.
"You couldn't sense this, but your bimbo used a spell beyond her control."
"I can control it," Laura muttered.
"Not when the portal is clamping down on your powers harder than your virgin ass would a man," Kadria said.
Laura and Mora gave Kadria the middle finger at the same time. They refused to look at Nathan, their cheeks flushed.
"Luckily, our spatial manipulation lets us pick which of the infinite timelines we end up in. To a point. I think I saw them blow themselves up 50 times. Mora nearly puked while doing it, which would have been hilarious given she was dilating time."
Kadria grinned.
"Eventually, they found the right one. If they'd been together when they cast that spell, then they would have erased themselves from existence the moment they picked the wrong timeline."
Nathan's legs felt numb. The world seemed to spin. He reached out to steady himself and found only air. Kadria grabbed his arm, a concerned look on her face. That was a first for her. Nathan placed his hand on her shoulder and tried to breathe. A look of horror dawned on her face.
"You saw it," she whispered.
Yeah, he croaked out. So, he had died. Did that mean Kadria had killed him as well? Was there any way for Nathan to even know? When he had planned to destroy himself in his timeline in order to stop her, had she replayed the minutes of their conversation 1,000 times in order to convince him? After all, he wasn't supposed to be able to sense the time manipulation of messengers. Now he could. That's a face that says your mind is going too far too fast, Kadria said. Trust me when I say that this magic isn't very flexible. They prevented their own fuck-up, but that's about it. You said they went through hundreds of timelines, Nathan said, in order to stop me.
It wasn't that many, Laura protested.
I did, Kadria admitted, ignoring the other succubus. But only to fix their own mistake. She ran a hand through her neatly trimmed black hair and huffed. This gets way too complicated, way too fast. If I told you that they simulated the future 100 times and chose the future they wanted, would you understand? No, Nathan said instantly. Kadria rolled her eyes. Right. Of course not. Let's go with an example, then. Imagine you're walking along a road and encounter a fork in it. Whichever path you go down, you won't ever have the chance to go down the other. That's the way this works. Got it? I think. I understand the concept of the road not taken, Nathan said, frustrated that she was trying to simplify the idea of controlling time into a reflection on past choices. Yeah, this isn't quite that. Let's say you can go down each path and see what it looks like, but only so far. After that, you get sent back and have to choose your path. That's exactly what terrifies me about what they did, Nathan pointed at the twins. Then he pointed at Kadria. And what you can do? You didn't seem terrified when I brought you here, Kadria said, eyes narrowed. Nathan shut up and lowered his finger. He hadn't thought of it that way. Wasn't he doing this to everybody else in his life? Now let me finish, so you stop freaking out for 5 fucking seconds, Kadria spat. This fork in the road thing? Super stupid, because people aren't limited to 2 choices. You get to that fork and you can do whatever you want. Maybe there's 5 directions to go. Maybe you decide to turn around. Maybe you stand still forever. Maybe you run off in any of 50,000 different directions that aren't on the road. Maybe a wolf jumps out from the bushes and kills you. Kadria huffed and continued. Each of those decisions results in a new timeline. Our powers let us take control of a timeline when they are created, but that involves going through potentially millions of timelines for every single thing we do, if we want to be perfect. The twins here redid a single spell over a few seconds, with no other decisions involved, and they still nearly fucked it up and killed themselves. It's not possible to constantly pick and choose the consequences of our actions, not even for a single conversation. I'm not some sort of time god, even if I wish I was. She ran a foot up his thigh, and he stepped away out of reflex. And if I was a time god, I'd have already worked out how to train you. You're so jumpy, despite how much sex you have. No, I just prefer to stay in control, Nathan said. Something about her explanation rubbed him the wrong way. It made sense, at least at heart. He remembered Laura doubled over from exhaustion after using the spell. After that, although she had been too strong for him and his champions to defeat, she hadn't used any of her powerful spatial spells, only small bursts to protect herself and to knock Seraph away.
At no point had Kadria ever shown signs of that sort of exhaustion. Eventually, he decided to give in and let her explanation stand.
Fine, let's go with that.
We can revisit the topic later, once these idiots are dealt with, Kadria said. Mora and Laura perked up at the realization the conversation had shifted back to them. Despite their claims of superiority, they seemed strangely willing to let Kadria do whatever she wanted.
Now then, why don't you tell us what sort of ornament you want her to be, Nathan?
Mora crooned. Chapter 24. Kadria raised an arm into the air. The twins smirked and placed their hands on their hips. They seemed keen to hear an answer from Nathan about what he wanted to do to Kadria. For safety's sake, he remained silent. A pressure built up in his mind, and he recognized it as the tether from Kadria. Out of curiosity, he quickly glanced into his mental world. Then he gulped down what little saliva he could as his throat dried out. He had thought the tendril from earlier had been huge. The sight of it had been scary enough, given he couldn't create a tether like it. This time, the tendril from his binding stone was still there, although much thinner. But what caught Nathan's attention were the thousands and thousands of tiny tethers running off his body. Kadria wasn't attached to his binding stone. She was attached to him. Part of him wanted to say, obviously, given she had traveled through time with him, but a very real part of him finally had to face the fact that he was mentally and magically connected to a demonic messenger, possibly until he died. He didn't have a clue why there were thousands of tethers, and he couldn't follow them, although he knew that one of them was connected to the same place as the tendril, that oddly familiar binding stone he had felt during the battle. In reality, Kadria lowered her arm. The room exploded. Dust billowed up from the ground, creating a massive cloud that Nathan tried not to breathe in. The tiles around Laura and Mora were shattered into millions of tiny fragments, and cracks ran across the entire room. Laura and Mora screamed. They ducked down, covering their heads and pushing against each other in a panic. Kadria strode up to them and placed a foot on top of Mora. She pushed Mora's head down to the tile, before doing the same to Laura. Both succubi whimpered in fear, remaining prostrate before Kadria.
Now that we've established who can turn who into ornaments, let's have a chat, Kadria said. Her pupils had enlarged, replacing her soft violet eyes with glowing portals to hell.
Her brown goat horns had turned charcoal black, and embers drifted off them. Kadria didn't summon a fake wind to make her dress blow. She didn't swing her arms around in weird poses. Her method of intimidation involved reminding people that she was the most dangerous person present, and Nathan was reminded that she had once wiped out his defenses effortlessly. He often forgot that, given how friendly and lustful she typically was these days. The two of you snuck in a connection to Nathan.
How? Kadria asked.
Connection? Was the tendril he sensed in his mental world from the twins?
It's your own fault for leaving him open when he claimed the binding stone here, Laura whined. He was just so tempting and...
I wanted an answer, not excuses. If you idiots can slip past a bastion's defenses easily, then maybe I can as well, Kadria said, eyes gleaming.
Mora huffed.
What are you talking about? We only got in because of you.
What? Kadria asked.
You have your hooks in him. We snuck in using the hole you made in his mind. All we needed was the opportunity.
If we missed his first binding stone, he'd be too strong to grab.
Mara grinned.
So, when you appeared and disappeared from a world in like 5 seconds, we knew something was up, especially because you've always destroyed every world you've touched. We followed you and grabbed him the moment he claimed the binding stone.
I don't remember being grabbed, Nathan said. They had to be subtle, Kadria muttered, or else I would have noticed and crushed them. Now that they've invaded, they're like an infestation in your mind. If I destroy them, it will hurt you permanently. She smirked. Of course, it's not like I can't do other things, but at least I know what my mistake was. I guess I didn't cover my tracks well enough.
You're not doing anything about them? Nathan asked, pointing at the cowering twins.
Kadria waved an arm in the air and wandered over to the throne. She took a seat in it and sat cross-legged, showing off her minimal clothing and bare legs.
They control the portal. If I incapacitated them, it would be too obvious. I need to limit my impact on this world where possible.
When the twins raised their heads, suddenly looking confident, Kadria added, If they get in my way, I'll happily mount them on my wall for decoration.
Can we not talk about mounting and ornaments? Nathan asked, scratching his head and feeling somewhat out of place. The casual way they talked about doing awful things to each other disturbed him.
Fine, Kadria said, but you're the one who has to keep these girls in check. If you lose an invasion even once, then you're theirs. And while I can protect you in the mental world, I can't do anything in the physical.
Mental world, Nathan remembered. You helped me during the battle, didn't you? Nathan asked. Kadria raised an eyebrow.
No.
I felt it. You don't need to lie.
Shrugging, Kadria ignored him.
In any case, you should get better at doing things here. You nearly cast a spell and lost instantly earlier. This world is theirs, and that means any magic you use will be under their control, unless you specifically craft it as mental magic.
The twins stood up and turned to face Kadria.
Stop trying to teach him things he doesn't need to know, they shouted in unison.
Mental magic in a mental world. Everything began to fall into place, at least kind of.
This is their mental world, isn't it? And the bedroom I meet you in is your mental world, right?
Nathan asked aloud.
Half right, I guess, Kadria said. This is a physical manifestation of their mental world. That's why it's so big, stable, and you can see things easily, even if parts of it look like a Picasso.
He was growing sick of all the references to things he knew absolutely nothing about. What was a Picasso, and what did it have to do with the appearance of this place?
But my room is different. Think of it like a frontier fortress of my mental world. You have multiple binding stones, right? And they make up your mental world. I have something similar. Only an idiot lets others into their mental world so easily. The things a guest can do are terrifying.
Kadria grinned at Nathan.
We're not idiots, Laura muttered. Besides, he can't do anything here. And we're more powerful here than anywhere else,
Mara added. If you weren't here, he'd be our plaything already. Once we lure somebody into our mind, they're ours forever.
A whisper crept into his mind.
You could be ours forever so easily.
Rage erupted within Nathan. He remembered what nearly happened last time and refused to let it happen again. Instinctively, he grabbed a hunk of energy from the binding stone. The twins grinned at him, their eyes twinkling. He slowed down, remembering Kadria's warning.
But Kadria had hurt them earlier. That must have been mental magic. Hadn't Kadria used that against him in his timeline? He tried to envisage what her magic had felt like. The feeling of lightning running through his veins, as something severed the nerves within his mind. A thunder crashing in his eardrums, but with no physical cause. Of overwhelming magical power cleaving his mental links apart, like a blade, so sharp and thin that it became invisible when flat. Forming his magic into those ideas, Nathan drew his sword and slashed at a wall. The entire hall filled with red light. A gash ran along the length of the wall, exposing the black void beyond. Black ink poured onto the floor, pooling and oozing toward them. The room began to shift and shimmer, its appearance transforming into one closer to that of a pastel painting.
"Stop! Stop! Stop!" the twins wailed.
They stared in horror at the gash and the black ooze. Within seconds, the red light vanished, and they healed the gash. The black ink disappeared soon after.
"If you do that again," Mora threatened.
Nathan raised his sword, and she froze, her eyes widening.
"Please don't," Mora whispered.
Kadria cackled in the background.
"Like I said, what kind of idiot lets others into their mental world so easily? Even a complete amateur can do serious damage."
She frowned.
"Don't be too savage, Nathan. We need them alive. And a messenger you know is better than a messenger you don't, should somebody replace them."
She had a point. Nathan sheathed his sword. The twins started to mutter to one another. Ignoring them, Nathan called out,
"I wanted to talk to you about this war."
"Later," Kadria said. "I think it's best if you calm down and think things through first."
What did that mean? Nathan shook his head and turned to leave. The tiles had been noisy before, but made clacking and clicking noises with every step he took.
"Hey, you're not leaving already, are you?" Mora suddenly asked.
A pair of hands grabbed his left arm.
"That's right. You should stay. We can show you why helping us is so much smarter than helping that silly little goat," Laura said.
A second pair of hands grabbed his right arm. They pulled him backward with surprising strength and spun him around. Giggling, they began to paw at his crotch and kiss his neck. Their gargantuan breasts pressed against his chest, and their bronzed thighs rubbed against his legs.
"Just compare our assets to hers," Mora said.
She pulled down the top of her black dress and leaned in closer, a cheeky grin stretched across her face. Laura pouted and followed her sister. Both women had similarly sized chests, although they were closer to pillows at this point. They were definitely large enough to be used as pillows. Massive, bronzed, fleshy pillows the size of their heads. Unable to help himself, Nathan squeezed them. Both succubi moaned. Their nipples hardened against his palms, and they pressed their bodies against him more. Suddenly, they pushed Nathan to the ground. They ripped their dresses off, revealing their soaked crotches and thighs. Without their clothing, Nathan could only tell them apart using the appearance of their eyes. Laura had white sclera, and Mora black.
"If you hurt him," Kadria started to call out.
Both twins made a talking hand gesture to Kadria, and the smaller messenger shut up. Kadria closed one eye and leaned her head on one palm. From his vantage point on the floor, Nathan could see Kadria sitting on the throne, as well as the two curvy succubi about to descend on him. Kadria's hands were suspiciously close to her lower body. If she remained idle, he figured the twins weren't a danger if he played along. At least, that's the excuse he used.
He absolutely wasn't enjoying the embrace of two succubi. That would be heresy. Soft pressure wrapped around his crotch, and Nathan looked down to see that his cock had been completely enveloped in their breasts. They were so stupidly massive that he couldn't even see a hint of his shaft or tip. He was fairly confident in his size, but these girls had the largest mammaries he'd ever seen or felt.
"Does it feel good?" Laura asked.
"Of course it does," Maura said. "Why are we asking him when we can feel his answer?" She grinned and began to push her tits up and down. Nathan groaned as both succubi began to move. Their movements were synchronized, and the soft, pillowy pressure gave way to constant stimulation. He had two pairs of breasts massaging his length. It was like a dream. Something warm and wet dripped onto his tip. Both girls were hovering over the gap between them, their mouths wide open. Glistening drops of saliva dripped from their mouths and onto his cock. Their movements never slowed during this, and the lubrication only added to the pleasure. Fire began to build up within his length. It was a slow build, but constantly increasing. Nathan leaned back against the floor and groaned as he felt himself riding the edge of what felt like a constant climax. His fingers found the slick entrances of the twins, and they rolled their eyes in ecstasy as he began to pleasure them in return. The pressure around his tip ebbed, but then came back. It was wetter than before, but the fire kept coming, and Nathan willed himself to finally come. "Hey, I don't remember giving you permission to modify him," Kadria said suddenly. Nathan blinked and finally looked up. The twins were still wrapped around his length, their breasts bouncing up and down. But now their mouths were pressed against his tip, and their tongues snaked up and down his shaft while lapping up every drop of pee he let out. They moaned and stared back at him with lidded red eyes. His fingers continued to explore them. It suddenly occurred to Nathan that he was seeing something impossible. He was an impressive enough size, but he was pretty sure he wasn't big enough for the twins to wrap their mouths around his length with their breasts pressed against his shaft. "If you make him too big, others will get suspicious," Kadria said, confirming his thoughts. Maura pulled herself off him with a loud slurp. Her chin was a sticky mess. "As if you care. I bet they won't even question it." They hadn't questioned his limitless stamina, but he suspected that growing a few inches might be different. For one thing, there was no way that Sen was letting him stick it in her rear anytime soon. She'd be back to stretching for a while. Kadria responded to Mara's point by getting down on her knees and wrapping her mouth around Nathan's enlarged length. Her eyes met his, and hers curved in pleasure. A moment later, those same eyes rolled into the back of her head when the twins forced his entire length down her throat. They giggled as Kadria spluttered and coughed. Nathan hit his climax immediately, the sudden pressure of Kadria's throat too much as he went deeper than he ever had before. When Kadria pulled away, it was with a stomach full of his seed and a very satisfied expression. Her chin and lips were a sticky mess of white. Her hands rubbed at her taut stomach. Then she scowled at the twins. "Who's first?" Kadria growled. In the end, it didn't matter. Nathan lost count of the number of times he climaxed. The three messengers would have milked him until the end of time if he let them. But he didn't have that long. He had to face reality again and handle the aftermath of the twins' attempt
to conquer him.
Chapter 25. Nathan's detour to visit Kadria had explained some of what happened during the invasion. The rest needed further investigation. The twins had attacked because they had been given an opening during the cascade. Sure, they had apparently been waiting since Nathan first arrived and had an unexplained interest in claiming Nathan, but that was nothing new. He had already known that their interest in him was of the sexual variety. No, it was the cascade itself that troubled Nathan. He needed some way to investigate the Aurelian spires to find the truth. The days that followed the invasion were a blur of activity. Nathan needed to confirm the safety of every fortress on the eastern border of the Empire, and also that the spires hadn't fallen. There was an outside possibility that the cascade had been due to the worst-case scenario, namely a messenger breaking through, and the spires shutting down the portal to cut off the messenger's army. If that were the case, Nathan would need to identify any escaping demons and alert every bastion possible. Any messenger capable of defeating the spire's trigem champion was far beyond Nathan's current capability. The twins had been powerful, but nowhere near the strength of the messengers that Nathan had fought in the past. It was clear that they had invaded too early. At the same time, Nathan needed to prepare for war with the Federation. If their armies marched on the Empire while communications were down, he needed to counterattack before it was too late. Losing Fort Tobram was not an option. Fortunately, no news arrived of Federation armies crossing the border, but he remained on edge. The sheer size of the cascade made Nathan's life more difficult. The ley lines remained disrupted for days. Sunstorm was the only champion he had that could quickly move between fortresses. Everything else had to be conducted the old-fashioned way, by horseback. Not even the horseless carriages worked. While the interference didn't affect most common spells or enchantments that relied on ambient magic, most newer inventions relied heavily on the density of magic that ley lines propagated. A mage could cast spells away from a ley line, but a horseless carriage failed. For that same reason, the carriages became gigantic decorations following the cascade. It was for this reason that modern magical barriers around fortresses and towns were unreliable. They relied on the same concepts as horseless carriages, and were prone to failure during cascades. Messengers had often triggered cascades in advance of land invasions. Right now, Anna's hometown of Trontia was effectively defenseless. Bastion fortresses were unaffected, as binding stones used a separate source of energy. The same went for mage towers built atop cairns, as the cairns allowed access to the ley lines, despite the disruption. Nathan prioritized contacting Leopold's fortresses and the various mage towers along the border. If evacuations became necessary, they would be the only safe havens available. Nathan would be required to focus his defensive efforts around them. On the third day, Nathan received the news he had been waiting for. One of Leopold's champions arrived from Forzel Valley. She brought news from the spires. "The spires are intact. The Council of Aurelia has placed the entire city under lockdown. Supposedly there were riots on the first day, but those quieted down when the Council deployed the army into the streets." Leopold's champion shook her head. "There are thousands of Aurelian soldiers in the valley, preventing anybody from going in or out of the spires." The only time Nathan had ever heard of the spires going into lockdown was when it was about to be attacked by land. The sprawl was large enough that its citizens wouldn't notice an entire city being dropped on top of them. With well over 1 million residents, the Aurelian spires were more than twice the size of any other city on Domar. But that news wasn't the real reason that Leopold's champion was in Garrick Pass. Leopold was. He had only awakened this morning, after 2 long days of constant medical attention from Vera and a local healer. His wounds would take weeks to fully heal. His armor was magical,
and that magic had done a lot of damage to his body when Mora had fused it to his chest. Nathan wasn't entirely sure if he would have survived an attack like that. He knew some regeneration magic and could repair broken bones, but a spatial attack of that magnitude was intended to be lethal. To Nathan, the goal had always been to block them. That was always why he kept his binding stone reserves available when fighting a messenger. The old man's face was pallid, and he barely opened his eyes. He gave his newly arrived champion the weakest smile that Nathan had ever seen him give. Nathan turned away, teeth gritted, and headed for his office. Inside, he found Alice sitting in his chair. She was wearing simple clothing, but considerably more girlish than her usual fare. A black ruffled skirt that fell to her knees, stockings, flats, and a collared shirt with plenty of gold frills and ruffles along every seam and button. The princess skimmed through the reports on his desk while writing something with a spare hand. Before the invasion, Nathan would have found the sight odd. He had figured Alice to be more of a flighty princess, the sort to avoid formalities, paperwork, and the dull side of her imperial heritage. Instead, she had proven better than Nathan at his own job, at least when it came to the paperwork. Seraph slipped in behind Nathan and gave him a small nudge. Dropping off a few letters, she picked up a small pile of completed paperwork without saying a word. The door slammed shut behind Nathan, and he found himself lost for words. The scratching of Alice's pen kept him company. Eventually, she looked up and blinked at him with wide brown eyes. "Did you want to sit down? This is your office," Alice said, gesturing to the table in front of her. Said table was covered by a map and more markers than any sane man could keep track of by himself. Nathan shook his head. "I'm just lost in thought. It's been a busy few days." "My father's courtiers say it's been a busy few days after a couple of long sessions of court. The nobles at the Diet said it's been a busy few days after they accomplished absolutely nothing a month ago." Alice fixed Nathan with a glare. "You've been doing the job of 10 men. Have you even slept since the invasion?" Nathan nearly answered honestly, his mouth half open, before he thought better of it. The ability to extend time with the binding stone meant that Nathan could power nap and refresh his mind in minutes. His body needed actual rest eventually, but he knew spells to put off sleep for up to a week if necessary. "Don't even think about lying," Alice said. "Faye and Sen have already spoken to me. They're worried about you. Sleep, Nathan. The world's not about to end."
"It could have," he said, admitting aloud his worries for the first time.
Alice stared at him. After a few moments, she lowered her pen. Again, she gestured to a chair. This time, he took it. "How?" she asked.
"You know about messengers?" Nathan asked.
"You and Leopold just killed 2.
"One, technically," Nathan said. "They were twins, so I'm counting them as one. And I'm not sure they're dead. The records indicate that the same messenger has invaded several times. Only defeating them outside the portal seems to work."
Alice bit her lip. "Okay. So they might be back. Is that it?"
"It's not about the twins."
Nathan sighed and rubbed the bridge of his nose.
"I mentioned that messengers are an existential threat to humanity. One possible cause of the cascade was that the spires had been breached by a powerful messenger. If that happened, what do you think comes next?"
No answer came for several seconds. Nathan looked at Alice to see her staring back at him with wide eyes, her lips slightly parted. "I thought you said that Tanius was behind it," Alice whispered.
"That's the assumption, but there's a saying about those," Nathan said, trying to temper his tone. He didn't want to sound like a smug asshole in front of Alice.
Alice frowned, recovering from her shock. "So you've been worried about the worst-case scenario?"
"That's my job as Bastion."
It would have been Leopold's job, but he's... Nathan trailed off, a pained look on his face. He stared at the wall, and his eyes caught on a shield that bore the emblem of the Imperial Army. For some reason, he couldn't tear his eyes away from it.
No, your job is to protect your binding stones. Leopold's is similar, but he also provides advice and support to Grandpa.
Alice scowled.
Not that I have any right to say this to you, after the negotiations, but aren't you taking on too much, Nathan? I'm your princess, and it's my duty to worry about these issues. Grandpa, both of them, is responsible for the Imperial Army and responding to major threats. You also have Anna, who controls the county.
Officially, that was how it was supposed to work. Bastions were officers in the military. They operated under the nobles and protected their nations, but they weren't supposed to run things on their own.
If I did leave things be, where would we be with the Federation? Nathan asked.
Alice picked up her pen and tapped it against the table. In open war, probably, with the situation flipped. We'd be trying to take back the Garrick Mountains instead of the other way around.
She rolled her eyes.
I get it. Like I said, I don't have the right to say anything.